My wife has been standing in line for 2 hours, but the polling process is so slow. And they are wasting so much time that a lot of women are standing in queue. Everyone is upset.
Pakistan's messy election may herald major changes. It's Friday, July 27th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, mixing superheroes and politics, the health powers of pineapples, and a major pop star struggles with substance abuse. It's all on today's VOA Asia. One of the most contentious elections in Pakistan's history has come to an end, with cricketer-turned-politician Imran Khan's party likely to form the next government. Speaking after being declared the victor, Khan called the elections free and fair, despite the objections of rival parties.
It is one of the freest and fairest elections in Pakistan. The 2013 election, all the parties said it was rigged. 22 parties said the election was rigged. And I was the only one who said there should be an investigation. So 2018 election, this election should be free and fair. But all the parties opposed me because they all rigged the election.
Well, as you heard there, most other parties in the country complained of election rigging. The election day was also marred with violence, but also brought firsts for minority and women voters. VOA's Aisha Tanzim brings us a snapshot of the day from capital Islamabad.
Hours after polling started, a devastating suicide attack in Quetta, in southwestern Pakistan, killing more than 30 people. Islamic State takes responsibility. Security, a concern in other parts of the country too.
We can't see any security around here. The only security we see is inside the polling station, but nothing in the surrounding areas.
But the news is not all grim.
In other parts of the country, the atmosphere around polling stations, especially in big cities, is more festive. People have come with families to vote, and the children are hanging around as the adults are casting their ballots.
While reports emerge of men stopping women from voting in some constituencies, in others, history is made. In Dir, Kohistan, North and South Waziristan, women vote for the first time. Meanwhile, those lining up to cast their ballots complain of a slow process.
My wife has been standing in line for 2 hours, but the polling process is so slow. And they are wasting so much time that a lot of women are standing in queue. Everyone is upset.
Several political parties cite these delays as a reason to request extra polling time, but the Election Commission denied the request. As the voting ends, and counting starts, several political parties complain that the final numbers are being manipulated. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
And much more on this major story in just a moment. And you can find all the details by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Washington's reluctance to declare an end to the Korean War until North Korea abandons its nuclear arsenal is putting it at odds with Pyongyang. In remarks before Uganda's legislature, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi pledged to intensify and deepen his country's engagement with Africa. At least 26 people are now confirmed dead and 103 others missing from Monday's catastrophic dam collapse in Laos. And at least 3 people were wounded after several rockets were fired into Kabul on Tuesday. There was no claim of responsibility. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Well, Khan's Pakistan's PTI party held a strong lead on Thursday. An outright victory has so far proved out of reach. Wilson Center South Asia scholar Michael Kugelman told VOA's Victor Beatty that an outright PTI win would be surprising, although he added a coalition government is not out of the question.
Certainly critics of the PTI would say that it's been getting a lot of its help, including possible rigging in its favor over the last few weeks, including on Election Day, possibly with the connivance of the Pakistani army that has made very clear that it doesn't really like the PTI's opponent, the PMLN. But the other, you know, the other possibility which PTI supporters would throw out there is that this is a party that is popular and has been able to capture critical constituencies, particularly among the young and the urban middle class. I think it's a combination of both the fact that, you know, it has been able to do a good job, get a fair number of votes, and also some of these efforts in recent weeks to, for example, get a lot of parliamentarians from the incumbent PMLN party to throw their allegiances to the PTI. In other words, it seems like there may have been some efforts behind the scenes to try to help advantage the PTI come Election Day.
Well, the new government, however it is constituted, faces some daunting challenges, particularly with regard to the economy.
The first big test, the first big decision for the new government will be how to handle a growing economic crisis. Pakistan has rapidly plunging reserves. It's got a serious balance of payments crisis, and it's going to need to decide if it goes to the IMF or not to get a loan. It's been 5 years since it last went to the IMF. It's a risky thing to do politically, especially for a government that's just taken office. Another risk of going to the IMF is that it risks making Pakistan's close friend China unhappy. And that is because if the IMF gave a loan to Pakistan, it would require that Pakistan be a lot more transparent about how it spends its money and about its various financial transactions, including all of these loans coming in from China as part of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, this huge infrastructure project, part of this broader Belt and Road Initiative. So that'll be a really tough challenge and a tough decision for this new government to deal with. But it's not going to be able to wait long. I think that in its first days in office, it'll need to make a decision on that.
And of course, there is domestic violence, Afghanistan, and difficult ties with Washington.
Problematic relationship with India and with Afghanistan, its other neighbor, and indeed the relationship with the U.S. has been really fraught over the last few months. And, of course, Imran Khan has been, he's been pretty critical of the United States over the years, even by the standards of Pakistan, where it's very common for politicians to essentially say rather nasty things about the U.S. But you know, not too long ago, Imran Khan vowed, he promised that if he were to take power, he would order that any U.S. drone strike in Pakistan be shot down. Now, he may moderate his rhetoric, for sure, if he's in power. But I would actually also say that when it comes to foreign policy, this is traditionally the realm of the military in Pakistan. So Imran Khan may not have an opportunity to think those issues through if the army is going to be calling the shots.
Michael Kugelman of the Wilson Center. Happening now in Asia, Asian stocks closed mixed Thursday, with losses in the Chinese markets deepening. The Shanghai Composite declined 0.71% to finish at 2882.93. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. At Comic-Con 2018, being held this week in San Diego, fantasy can come to life, at least for the fanboys and fangirls there. Fans dress up as Superman, Spider-Man, Captain America, just to name a few. But this year, politics is intruding on the fantasy playground as never before. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports.
San Diego Comic-Con 2018.
At Comic-Con, fantasy often comes to life. For Dorian Black, it's taking on the persona of Superman, an alien from another planet who represents the immigrant spirit.
There was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment happening at the time he was created, and I don't feel like that's ever changed. We like to pretend that, you know, America has changed greatly from that time period, and it, a lot of ways it has for the better, but we're still having this argument of, like, you know, do we let in refugees? How much is too much? Do we help? Do we not help?
From immigration to women's rights, many fans see their superheroes' values as the answer to today's political and social debates in the U.S. That's nothing new, says Ben Saunders, who studies comics and pop culture. He notes that Superman's comic debut was in 1938, during the Great Depression.
When Superman first appeared, and a lot of people don't know this, but he's almost a kind of anarchist socialist. He fights representatives of the oil companies. He fights advertising executives who are out to fleece the public. He campaigns for prison reform.
Saunders says Superman became more socially conservative in the 1940s and 50s as American values changed. What hasn't changed is that Superman always does the right thing.
Of course, our notions of what the right thing is change. It's culturally contingent. It changes month to month sometimes, and that's what makes Superman a particularly challenging character to write.
The characters become the voice of whoever's creating them at the time.
Fans of comics say many of these characters are more relevant today than ever, and that includes the female superhero Captain Marvel, who will have her own movie in 2019.
You know, strength and female strength especially, which I think is really important in our current world.
Another fan favorite is Captain America.
I believe that Captain America holds really good values of staying true to your family and really just making sure that you stick to what you're going to say and what you're going to do.
I like all of them. They're all heroes to help save the people. They do good deeds.
Fans say their superheroes represent an ideal that people in positions of power would be wise to emulate.
As a society, we're so jaded to the idea of power that if you have power, you're just by default corrupted by it. And there's that saying that absolute power corrupts absolutely, but Superman's sort of like a counter-argument to that. You can be all-powerful and be good, but you have to try to be good.
It's a message often conveyed in the Spider-Man story that with great power comes great responsibility, something fans say rings especially true for people in power today. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, San Diego.
Hi, I'm Susan Yawkey of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a Cambodian who spent his life chronicling the genocidal reign of Pol Pot, along with five other Asians, are this year's winners of the Magsaysay Award, regarded as Asia's counterpart to the Nobel Peace Prize. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. China's foreign ministry has hailed the decision of foreign airlines to comply with its demand that they list Taiwan as part of China. China's Civil Aviation Administration issued the demand in April to more than 40 foreign airlines to remove references to Taiwan, Hong Kong, or Macau as separate from China. Taiwan condemned what it calls China's insolent actions. Bill Sharp is a Hawaii-based Taiwan scholar who is host of the online program Asia in Review. He told VOA's Victor Beatty that the airlines were caught in the middle of this dispute and had to decide what makes the most business sense.
It was a business decision, and if they wanted to be on friendly terms with the Chinese government, they had to go along with the Chinese government's thought. But the thing that irritates me about this is I don't like the arrogance in which China is making this demand. You know, it had no room for negotiation on this. Some of the airlines wanted to discuss this issue in negotiations, and China completely slammed the door on that. And I think that this underlines a kind of tone that you continually see growing out of Beijing. Arrogance, demands, etc. I think on the other hand, too, it's also an act of frustration on the behalf of the mainland Chinese government. Obviously, they want Taiwan to unite with the mainland, and there's little promise of that. I mean, I think attitudes are more or less hardening against that. And this is also based on my interviews with various Chinese-Taiwan experts. There's a feeling of frustration that's emanating from Beijing about uniting with Taiwan.
When this first came out in May, the White House described it as Orwellian nonsense.
When I think of Orwell, his two famous novels were 1984 and Animal Farm. especially 1984, dealt with the manipulation of language to control people. This seems to me to be very much Orwellian, so I agree with that comment.
What kind of reaction are you going to see in Taiwan?
Taiwan has learned to live with this sort of thing. They're not going to be happy about it. Exactly what steps they take, I don't know. But I think what is clear is that this is only one step of a number of steps that the mainland is sort of planning to execute to limit Taiwan's international visibility and in an attempt to make it unite. Now, I'll give you an example. A few months ago, they issued the 31 strategies of how to induce young Taiwanese to come to the mainland to work. They know that the job market is not particularly good in Taiwan, and so they're trying to make the mainland seem very appealing for young Taiwanese to work there. Of course, this is politically important because young people are the base of Tsai Ing-wen's presidency. You also see where China is trying to intimidate Taiwan by launching military drills and exercises very close to Taiwan in the Taiwan Strait and also flying combat missions around the island. I think that you'll also see another strategy unfold itself more than it has already. It's obvious that Taiwan has few embassies and consulates around the world. However, in place of bona fide embassies and bona fide consulates, they have a number of what they call Taipei economic and cultural offices, which in essence are really consulates. I think what you'll see, and you've seen this in some places, especially like in Africa, the Chinese government in Beijing puts pressure on those countries to change their name to something like Taipei China Economic and Cultural Office, and any way to sort of diminish any kind of recognizable identity as a separate entity.
According to the New York Times, China is set to overtake the U.S. as the world's largest aviation market. This news alert from VOA Asia. Chinese officials have detained a suspect in the small explosion that occurred outside the U.S. Embassy in Beijing Thursday afternoon. There were no injuries. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Brazilian researchers are developing an innovative process using pineapples to speed the healing process for skin wounds. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
It's the world's most popular tropical fruit, but it's not just for eating. Brazilian researchers have found another use for pineapples in high-tech medicine. That's because the sweet, tangy fruit, which is native to South America, contains bromelain, a natural anti-inflammatory enzyme that has long been used in the region to treat ailments and speed the healing process. The Brazilian researchers infused bromelain into nanocellulose, a fibrous film which can then be placed over skin wounds.
The presence of this bandage of nanocellulose containing bromelain helped the healing process, which is what we expected, since bromelain, because of its protein digesting action, removes the top layer, which is the dead layer of the wound, and so permits oxygen to reach the skin surface, assisting healing.
The nanocellulose itself is produced using bacteria fed by fruit waste.
Our innovation has two purposes. One is the joining of the bromelain to the pineapple protein taken from a waste product, the husk of the pineapple. Second, we also use waste products in the production of nanocellulose. We use fruit waste to make the culture, which is the nutrient for the bacteria to produce the nanocellulose.
The innovation is still in the early stages of development as a treatment. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Finally, some sad news from the world of pop culture this week. Our Sarah Williams spoke with Larry London, host of Border Crossings, for the details.
Today we're talking about Demi Lovato. We've got a song that came out just a few months ago from Demi Lovato we're going to play. But here's what we know so far. We're following this closely. 11:30 in the morning Tuesday, police were called to a house in California. And the report was a 25-year-old female had suffered an apparent drug overdose. And now we find that it was, in fact, Demi Lovato. And she is currently awake and with her family. That's the latest information we've received. There was a statement issued by her representatives that apparently they asked that incorrect information is being distributed right now. So they're asking for privacy, respect her privacy at this moment. The statement went on to say her recovery is the most important thing right now. Demi Lovato has suffered alcohol addictions, drug addictions for a number of years. She participated in a documentary about her own life called Complicated, which came out last year, in which she revealed at age 17 she was encouraged by some friends to try cocaine. She was a little scared to try it. She did, and she liked it. And she's had, you know, what's been an up-and-down ride for the last number of years. She's been in and out of rehab several times. And Demi's dad was also an alcoholic who battled mental health issues, just like his daughter. We're going to check out a song, and then I've got some more to talk about with regard to Demi Lovato. This song she recorded with Luis Fonsi, who gave us the big hit Despacito. It's called Échame la Culpa, which in English means blame me. So here's Demi Lovato and Luis Fonsi.
Hey, Fonsi.
Oh, no.
¿Qué pasa, Demi?
Hey, yeah. Ay. Tengo en esta historia algo que confesar. Ya entendí muy bien qué fue lo que pasó. Y aunque duela tanto, tengo que aceptar que tú no eres la mala, que el malo soy yo.
No me conociste nunca de verdad. Ya se fue la magia que te enamoró. Y es que no quisiera estar en tu lugar, porque tu error solo fue conocerme.
Well, Larry, Demi Lovato, she certainly, as you were saying, has had a lot of challenges in recent years.
Yes, she has. It's been a difficult time for Demi Lovato. She's had a lot of inner demons. She announced not too long ago that she celebrated being sober for 6 years. She celebrated that fact. Shortly after the announcement that she had celebrated that, she then announced she had a setback, that she had taken a drink. And she went on stage. She has a song that's out that did very well for her called Sober, inspired by this battle she's dealt with alcoholism. And she cried when she apologized to her fans in attendance at the show that she had taken a drink and a setback. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you're not allowed to have even one drink, because an alcoholic is a disease that you battle for your entire life. So this is something that set her back, but Demi Lovato herself has had issues with drugs. She was on tour with the Jonas Brothers a number of years ago. She had to take herself off the tour. She was admitted for therapy, for rehab. She had cut herself. She had gotten in fights with people backstage. So she's had an explosive personality. She's been in show business ever since she was about 6 years old. She acted on a popular children's show with Selena Gomez called Barney and Friends. And then later on, she went on to star on the Disney Channel. She appeared in a film called Camp Rock with the Jonas Brothers. She dated Joe for a while. She had a relationship with actor Wilmer Valderrama that went on for about 6 years and ended in 2016. The whole industry is behind her right now. A lot of people are showing an outpour of love and expressing their concerns for her. Wilmer had posted that he was shocked and devastated. There's been messages coming in from Halsey, Ariana Grande, Bebe Rexha, Kehlani. Even Charlie Puth dedicated a song to Demi during a concert recently. Nick Jonas asked that everybody pray for her, and she's a fighter. She was scheduled to be on the Fox TV network this week to appear on a show called Shazam. She had previously taped that. They decided to not run that show. She had a concert scheduled in Atlantic City this week, obviously canceled. She's been on tour for her latest album, which is called Tell Me You Love Me. And we're going to wait and see how this all turns out for her, although we are pulling for her. Everybody loved Demi Lovato, and she was an inspiration. She was speaking out on behalf of mental health issues for young people. She was a role model. In her latest and last tweet, she posted on Monday late evening. The last tweet was a photo of herself with the caption that said, "Happy and free."
Well, hopefully she'll get the help she needs.
Absolutely. I know that they, you know, are asking that everybody give her some respect right now, concerned about some misinformation. New York Times reporting that maybe other drugs beyond heroin were involved in the situation. So it's an unfolding story, and I'm sure VOA News is following it, and we at Border Crossings are following it. But everybody in the music industry, all of her fans who are known as Lovatics, are all behind her, and they're pulling for her as well.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
And that is VOA Asia. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday.